there's a lot of sensitive information. It's widely used for ransomware or just ransom. Hackers might be able to blackmail people or organizations that they will leak this information out in the future if they don't pay something.
I'm Steve Stein, and welcome to Inside Asia. This week, we're revisiting what some are calling the future battleground, and it goes by the name of cyber warfare. This isn't science fiction. Every year, hackers penetrate firewalls in order to release computer viruses, steal data, and in some cases, shut down systems. That's serious business, and for hospitals and healthcare systems, the repercussions are downright life-threatening. So it was last week that Singapore's largest healthcare institution, SingHealth, was the victim of just such a cyber attack. It was described by the Singapore government as deliberate, targeted, and well-planned. The health records of at least 1.5 million people were compromised, including those of the island nation's Prime Minister, Lee Hsien Loong. Though none of the information was altered, and later in the program we'll get to why that's a significant clue, the hackers had access to the system for about a week, during which time they exfiltrated crucial data on outpatient dispensed medications. How'd this happen? Who might have been behind it? Why did they target patient records? To start to put together the pieces, we turn to two key members of the Inside Asia Brain Trust. Miko Nimela is author of Anatomy of a Cyber Attack and president and CEO of Kinkeo, a Singapore-based cyber threat intelligence company. We're going to hear from Miko in the second half of the program, but we wanted to get the discussion rolling with Mac Banner, who until his recent retirement, or indefinite sabbatical as he likes to put it, spent four decades running hospitals in Asia. I started off by asking him what his take was on the situation.
Well, it is disturbing. It's disturbing on two levels. One is, anybody who lived in Southeast Asia has sort of the most respect for government sort of balance, competence, efficiency, effectiveness, all the good descriptive terms of government he would apply to Singapore with great admiration. So the fact that they were successful in breaching, you know, the defenses or the barriers for sort of the most personal sensitive information of a system, that's really disturbing that they were able to do it. I didn't read the whole article about it, but my understanding was that they were searching specifically for the medication that the Prime Minister was on, or one of the sort of the tidbits of information that they were, they seemed to be trying to find.
There was reference to that, yeah. And I don't know if that's just the Prime Minister, if there are others, or if that was just a sidebar mention. I'm not sure.
Well, I guess then you sort of go back and say, well, if anybody is going to dig into and find out why, I mean, how the breach occurred, and then sort of trace it backwards to see who is doing it, and so on and so forth, I would have the most faith in the Singapore government to do that. I didn't read the full article to see if that had been reported on to say, you know, and you sort of expect if there was an inordinate interest in the Prime Minister's medications, then you would look, okay, well, what government would want to have something over or a bit of knowledge about that could possibly be used to their advantage in some sort of negotiation with Singapore or somehow have, do something to reap some competitive advantage?
And we're speaking to motive, and unfortunately, we don't know what that motive is. But I guess what the question for me that comes up is, based on your experience, like, what's the extent of patient information available in a hospital database? I mean, is it more extensive than what you might find in a bank or in a school or,
the most sensitive, personal data that you, I mean, what, you know, you think about if you've got a government, I mean, you've got a bank, or if you've got any of these sort of things that people sign up for and put their information, like Amazon or any of the loyalty programs, your Singapore Airlines program, your credit card, loyalty program, you know, all these things, all your hotel loyalty things, or you've got, you've got your personal information online, you've usually got a credit card online, you've got all, you know, all of that. You've got certain of it, and they all say it's all encrypted and it's all safe and all this, and then you hear about these intrusions and, you know, data from, you know, 6 million people have been compromised.
Hmm.
So all of that, I mean, and you think, okay, well, what does a hospital have? A hospital has all of that. A hospital has all of your demographic data. It probably has, if you're paying online, it probably has your credit card information. It may not have your banking information, but it's got a credit card information and so on and so forth. So all of that is sitting in the computer.
Mm.
But then you've got all your personal medical records.
Right.
And while, you know, I think most hospitals take, you know, precautions to basically encrypt and guard that data as best you can, I think that one of the lessons in the cyber world that we live in now is that none of those defenses are impenetrable.
Are hospital IT systems, Mac, typically less secure than, let's say, banks or financial institutions?
I think they are. I think I'm not an IT person. Let's start that way. But it sort of depends on what the intent of the people that are breaking in, what are they trying to do. I mean, if they're just trying to steal the financial information, that's a risk everybody takes.
Mm.
But if they're trying to get in and learn something specifically about an individual, you think, well, why are they doing that? Why would they want to do that?
Right.
Now another sort of threat or thing you wouldn't want is to have somebody go in and actually manipulate an operating system, like throwing off laboratory data reporting results.
Right. Right.
Of saying, you know, everyone that reports positive reports negative, or, you know, everything that is, you know, on various tests would be boosted by 30% of what they was actually, you know. Or you can compromise things like your First Data Bank is a program that is used to highlight contraindicated prescriptions to various patients. You know, if you're on high blood pressure, they shouldn't be doing this and so on and so forth. And, you know, all hospitals use these systems to basically as a safety measure. If those were compromised in a way that they broke down or weren't effective, then, you know, you could actually do real harm to people.
This is Steve Stein, and I've been speaking to Mac Banner, an Asia healthcare sector veteran and former senior hospital executive. When we come back, cybersecurity expert Mikko Nimmela weighs in. Stay with us. This is Inside Asia, and in this episode, we pry into the world of hacking, hospitals, and the risk to the industry and to patients. Our focus this episode is the recent cyber attack on the Singapore healthcare system that compromised the data of 1.5 million patients. Mikko Nimmela is president and CEO of the cyber threat intelligence company Kinkao. I started off with a basic question. Why did a group of hackers target a group of hospitals in Singapore, of all places?
Well, hackers target networks of hospitals everywhere in the world, so Singapore is not an exception. I think it's just been almost too long that nothing has happened in Singapore. Because Singapore is such a high-tech city, there should be, if you look at statistics, there should be something happening. But about what hospitals are interesting for hackers is the information. There's a lot of personal information that can be easily monetized, and it's usually held in one place. Otherwise, the different departments of hospitals and different hospitals can't access that information. So everything that hackers are looking for are actually consolidated in one database. So, of course, that's really attractive target for them.
Well, what might they find in a hospital patient database that they couldn't find in other databases, for instance?
So they have basically all personal information about the patients, which is every one of us. You don't really need to be ill to be in the database. You just need to have a health insurance, or you have ever visited a hospital, and then your information is there. But you need to have ID numbers, sometimes addresses, credit card numbers, any illness history, and these kind of things. A lot of things that can't be changed afterwards. So, for example, if you lose your ID number for hackers, you can't really change it. So, in most of the countries, so that's going to be a problem. And then another thing is It's because there's a lot of sensitive information. It's widely used for ransomware or just ransom. So hackers might be able to blackmail people or organizations that they will leak this information out in the future if they don't pay something.
When you think about it, I mean, this is just about that you're referencing so much information in these patient records, even more so than you'd find in a bank or a stock brokerage or, a hotel, frequent flyer programs. I mean, it does seem to me that when you kind of sit back and consider it, hospitals are perfect targets for hackers who want very detailed information. But I don't hear a lot about this. Are there other instances around the world that you're aware of where hospitals have been attacked?
Oh, I think it happens all the time. I'm not sure if it's been covered well enough, but usually it's not really a global thing. People don't care about neighboring countries' hospital hacks. They care about their own data. And I would like to highlight one thing. What's the difference between, for example, financial data, frequent flyer data, and the hospital data? You're voluntarily giving up your data for airlines or opening bank accounts in certain banks. But when it comes to healthcare, you can't really choose. When you have something that is to be taken care of, you just need to go somewhere. So that's why there's usually more safeguards in place, especially from legislation side. And that's why this information is more valuable for hackers than other information.
Do you think, I mean, specific to hospital records, and as you point out, it could be health records or even pharmaceutical prescriptions, that information would be quite valuable to insurance companies, wouldn't it? Do you think that there might be any opportunity to resell that information to insurance organizations that could take advantage of it? I mean, or is that just too dark a thought?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think anyone will admit it publicly that insurance companies would use it that way. At the same time, if you look at it from the criminal side, how you can monetize this information. So there's plenty of ways. One is just blackmailing people. One is selling this to someone who will actually get prescriptions and withdraw some medicines from pharmacies and then sell it in the streets or in dark web or whatever. Or just actually reaching out to the individuals, because people are more than happy to pay 20, 50 bucks, even 100 bucks to make sure that their information is not leaked, especially if they have anything sensitive there. So, for example, now in the news, there was information about the prime minister's accounts included in the data breach. So, of course, prime minister is the extreme example of this, but I'm pretty sure there will be a lot of other people who really don't want their information to be leaked for some scandal.
Yeah, Mikko, can you take us through how this happened? Just, to explain in layman's terms, his reference to the blaming malware as a means of infecting the network and then allowing access to the patient database. Does that sound right to you? And how exactly does malware work?
Well, I haven't heard the investigation board's report yet. I think they are investigating it right now, so we don't know yet. But what I've seen, there was no information about in dark web about this hack yet. So the hackers probably haven't leaked anything. So what we have heard is that Sing Health has been able to identify whose records have been compromised or stolen, but they also say that they haven't been altered. So the integrity of the data is still there, which leads me to think that it's probably someone or the hackers have been using someone's access who has access to view certain things, but they can't change the data.
Got it. Okay.
So when this happens, then we can have a look at all the different stakeholders. Doctors probably can edit some of the data. Nurses probably can't, and so on. And different institutions, they have different privilege levels. But to me, it sounds more like probably some kind of password reuse would lead to this kind of scenario. So if someone loses their password and then the hackers are able to retrieve that password and log in the systems, and they are able to see a lot of things, that would make sense. But of course, this is all just speculating right now. I don't have enough data about this.
They mentioned in the article that one of the interim solutions is to basically ban access to the internet on the 28,000 terminals that sit within the Sing Health hospital organization. Is that going to solve the problem, or is that just a measure to try to reduce any possibility of future hacking?
well, any technical solution alone is not enough. So you need to think the big picture. So maybe it could be part of the solution, maybe not. But it, for me, it sounds like something that's easy to say that they're going to do, and then convince people that they take it very seriously. But alone, of course, that's not enough. And at the same time, we really need to think, what is more important? Is it really that we need to secure the data that no one has access, or do we actually need to make sure that when doctors really need this information, they have it at hand? For example, what the patients are, whether they're treating patients with medical allergies, I think it's quite important that the data is available, and they don't call someone to go to other buildings, log in, and find out. So sometimes the medical data has to be accessed very quickly. So that's another thing we need to consider when securing these kind of things.
You know, Mikko, just considering the way that hospital IT systems have evolved, I recall that, you know, years ago, information resided on different databases. I mean, you'd had patient medical records in one place, you had financial information in another place, you might then have information about pharmaceutical prescriptions in another place. And then a movement has been on in recent years to kind of synchronize those databases, bring the information together, you know, one point of insight. They talk about this, you know, in order to make sure that nothing is missed when they're diagnosing or prescribing for patients. And then, of course, pushing some of that data into the cloud. Is any of that, even though it makes sense in terms of how you manage your databases and it's very efficient, is there any reason why they perhaps should rethink this approach and keep information in separate databases for just this reason?
Well, in the end, the databases are still going to be communicating to each other. So at some point, the patient needs to pay the hospital bill, and then they will need to retrieve where this payment is coming from, and where it's going to, and who has been charging it, and so on. So in the end, there will be some integrations in any case. So I think it's more about the bigger design. That is there a possibility to see multiple records at the same time? Because now people have been receiving SMSs from the government that this information was part of the breach and this wasn't. So clearly they have quite good knowledge about what information has been breached. So the question is, how many records can you access at the same time? So if you can access only 10 or 100, then that's the maximum exposure you can get. So I think that's more about the design than should we integrate things.
Mikko, did the government proactively alert people to this, or did people become aware of it because they were receiving messages or because the database was compromised and they were notified in other ways?
So Singapore government has reached proactively people. So when they found out this has happened, they actually sent SMSs to everyone who was involved. Even if your information is in the breach or isn't in the breach, they inform everyone. And that's a good thing because that brings more confidence about the process, that they actually know what's happening in their systems.
I'm Steve Stein, and that was Mikko Niemelä, President and CEO of the cyber threat intelligence company, Kenkeo. Earlier in the program, I was speaking with Mac Banner, longtime Asia healthcare sector CEO. That brings us to the Asia Insider Minute, where I take 60 seconds or so to wrap up our conversation, explore the topic at a broader level, and maybe even pose a few questions of my own. There are two parts to this problem. The first speaks to the design and development of databases in general. For years, institutions holding sensitive customer or financial data argued that consolidating customer information in a central repository and then outsourcing the hosting of that data in a third party was to invite trouble. Keeping data in silos and offline, they argued, was simply safer. Those were the old days. If safety was the old banking mantra, convenience is a new one. And throughout the past 10 years, banks that failed to deliver internet and mobile banking were as good as dead. Financial institutions have spent billions to safeguard their networks and serve as arbiters of financial data management. All the while, the legions of hackers have continued to grow. So what about hospitals? In the medical profession, data is fragmented and distributed everywhere. It wasn't planned that way, it just happened. Doctors scribble notes, nurses fill out forms, drugs are dispersed, and insurance companies notified. There's a lot of data and moving parts. When's the last time you were in a hospital and found yourself being asked the same questions over and over again? That's because they're taking down information in multiple systems all the time. From the patient's perspective, it's a trying experience, which is why we've seen institutions move toward consolidating that information into electronic medical records, or EMRs. With your EMR in place, every nurse, doctor, or specialist sees the same data in real time. It's the best and safest way to do things. It's also low-flying fruit for hackers, a treasure trove of personal information in one tidy database alcove. The question I'm asking is this. Where do we draw the line between efficiency and security? How, in a world of cloud computing and deep analytics, do we protect the most sensitive of all personal data? And with every new cyber attack, is there a risk of overreacting, shutting down access, eliminating ease of use, or throwing up firewalls so thick that only real-time DNA samples will grant you access to your own personal data? These are questions bound to keep our IT and security specialists up at night for years to come. In the meantime, maybe we should just all focus on staying healthy and out of hospitals. Thanks for listening. Until next week, this is Steve Stein saying, "Come in from the outside on Inside Asia."